the side.
Come on, man. And with the local DBC news, LL Cool J with a triumphant comeback. For a solo. But tonight,
don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants.
88.9 WIN FM, welcome to Covering the Canvas. You're joined by your host, who ironically doesn't have any facial hair, Jesse Beard. Tonight I'm joined by Australian wrestling legend, healer, saviour, showstopper, main event, icon, 1989 Market Square Lego building winner, all-round nice guy, Shane Hero. Oh,
thank you, Jesse. Pleasure to be here.
One of those fancy haircuts and nephew of Chuck Norris, Commissioner Norris.
Hello there.
Man with a camera and one of Australia's best photographers, and also one of the handful of British people in Australia, Steve Bradford. And tonight we are joined by special guest, Global Force Wrestling Corner Post, international superstar, and now wrestling down under, Muhammad Ali Vaez.
I am so excited to deep butt on this show.
You do listen.
I told you, I've been listening.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I think you're the first guest ever to actually listen to the show.
Hey, man.
Old person.
Does that bury me in a way?
It kind of does.
It kind of does, yeah.
A little bit.
Shit.
You just lost cool points.
Shane, let's take it into international news here. I'll let you take this one away.
The big news coming out this week was, of course, the arrest of Jimmy Superfly Snuka, relating back to... murder charges from 1986. Obviously, at this point, it's still going to court. I've just completely drawn a blank onto the correct terminology there, but look, has not been found guilty yet.
Yeah.
But it is something which has been...
He's been indicted.
He has, yes, yeah. Yes. So at this stage, it is serious, obviously, to get to this point.
The original charges were murder charges, yes?
Exactly right, yeah. So it dates back to, it is 1986. It was something which, at the time, he was charged and found not guilty. And then the version of events that he had given to police back then, more recently he's then given a different account in his autobiography that came out a few years ago, which is what has led to the more recent investigation being reopened. So, obviously... more to follow on that story as it develops in coming weeks, and we'll find out more.
Definitely,
obviously.
Yeah, definitely. But
it's going to be interesting because he's obviously going to be grilled, and he's suffering from dementia.
Mm.
So, kind of think his story is going to change again, or his recollection of events won't be as pinpoint accurate as you'd like to believe.
Well, I think that's probably a problem you can have with a lot of people in this case, because dating back to 1986,
so 30 years ago.
Yeah, memories aren't going to be that fresh anymore. So.
Absolutely. Just something we'd like to touch on before we jump into the interview with the debutting Mr. Byers over here.
Yeah.
Australia's own B-Boy and Mantis. Generic Hopper, was he called?
They're calling him the Genetic Grasshopper.
Chikara's Knight of Trios, which is...
King of Trios, Knight
awesome.
Three. On the same card as, little indie guys called, the Young Bucks. AJ Styles.
I think I've heard of him.
I've seen him once or twice.
Yeah, it's not a bad card to be on.
No, awesome.
So well done, B-Boy and Genetic Grasshopper.
Yeah.
Or Mantis, as we know him.
Yeah. So the debuting Mr. Byers here.
That's pretty fine there, isn't it?
It really has.
You should see the size of the smile on Jesse's face at that. He's just... thrilled.
I can't get that. Yeah, it's just, it's made my night. It's actually thrown me off. I had everything like written down and ready.
No, you didn't.
Kind of did. And
I can tell a lot of preparation goes into this.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I was laying in bed today and I was like, I've got to get some questions ready. But and I did.
I'm sure he's really happy to know you were laying in bed thinking about him, Jesse.
Yeah, who isn't?
I mean, it kind of comes with the job. I understand. A lot of passion.
So OVW is, we were speaking before the show and you told us you did some indies before OVW.
Yes.
And then you made your transition to OVW. Tell us about that.
Well, I started wrestling in 2004. And at the time I was doing, like, I guess you could say the independent circuit in the area that I lived in. And I saw a lot of parallels to that I see here in Australia today. And it's that you have a bunch of companies that don't talk to each other and kind of compete against each other, and then a bunch of talent floats between all those companies. And from the talent side, I could tell that I had just gotten into wrestling, and I don't know how to say this. I was leading matches when I had no business even being in a ring myself.
Mm.
So I knew that I needed to get out of there if I was ever going to do anything. Yeah. And I also was cognizant that OVW was 90 minutes away from me, and it was the developmental center for WWE. So that's kind of what led to
Absolutely.
Me going there. And that was about 2005
yeah.
that I went.
So once you get to OVW, how do you get your break in there? Because we've heard stories of people just knocking on the door and going, can I have a chance?
Hi, can I have a job?
Yeah.
And then more often than not, yes. no, I'm kidding. Well, it's all about timing. It was truly a unique situation because you have WWE's developmental center attached also to a training school. So anybody could enroll.
Mm.
It's not like you had to be somebody special to just be there. The big deal was being used on the show. Because we had, I think at the time that I started there was 90 people in the intermediate wow. class. And I'm talking like there was no wellness policy back then either.
Yeah.
So you've got 90 just juice heads and just guys larger than life all fighting for an opportunity yeah. to go and get squashed by Paul Burchill or whoever had a job that was down there in developmental that the show was centered around. Mm. So it just so happened that I came in at the right place, right time because of my ethnicity. And then there was another guy who is Lebanese. And together, the two of us looked good next to each other as Middle Easterners. So the United States was fighting two wars at the time against people that looked like me. So it was, I got opportunities that I had no business getting because of right place, right time, literally.
And I guess for anyone listening who's unfamiliar with OVW, of course, Ohio Valley Wrestling, as you said, it was the developmental territory for WWE for quite a few years. I mean, who were some of the guys that you had the opportunity of really working with there who obviously listeners to the show would be familiar with?
I mean, working with on an intimate level, and that sounded kind of weird. But like more than just your cursory handshake here and there, I mean, I got the opportunity to pick Joey Mercury's brain a lot. And he took a liking to me too, so he kind of was one of the first guys that opened my eyes a little bit to how the business really works. Rob Conway has been a huge mentor for me for a long time, and really he taught me how to do tag team wrestling. That Lebanese guy that I was referring to earlier that they paired us with 9 years ago in the developmental system is my current tag team partner for Global Force Wrestling.
Okay. Yep.
So that's how long we've been working with each other. Mm. Rob Conway is the guy who kind of took us under his wing and said, you know, it took our tag level to, I guess, another, or I should say our tag team to another level. So those two guys, but then you would always see like guys that I didn't have a lot of contact with at that time, but like your CM Punks, who at the time was, I think, ECW champion.
Yeah.
So you'd see him, or you'd see like guest coaches would come in, like Tony Atlas. Or as a matter of fact, I remember a time when Tony Atlas and CM Punk got into a fight with each other in front of the entire locker room after a television taping over Tony Atlas telling CM Punk that he looked stupid wearing his taping his hands like that.
Mm.
And you know, I guess he thought Punk was just another goof in developmental, so he was just telling him. And Punk's like, do you know who I am? In 6 months, every kid will have these, and I will make $1 million, and you will look stupid. Like, it was the most awkward thing ever to see this guy, who you know is kind of right, yelling at another guy who doesn't watch the product and is just, you know, so that was a random story that I threw in there, but I don't know, it just came into my head.
That's amazing because I remember reading that story years ago. It is one of my favorite Tony Atlas stories.
No, that's the truth. That is the truth. And that's
amazing.
That's the thing about Punk. When all this stuff came out, like, he's always been the kind of guy who's not afraid to tell you what he thinks, like, for real. Geez, who else? I don't know. I remember Colt Cabana when he was there in developmental. And
this is 2006-ish?
2007.
Because
I was already on the show at this point when I remember Colt coming in. He had an awesome feud with a guy named Sean Spears, who is now named Ty Dillinger. Is that what it is?
Yep.
Oh, man. Those guys tore it up. quite a lot of guys. Geez, Ryback was there quite often, off and on. EC3 on the TNA side. Yep. I remember he tore his ACL.
He would have been very young, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
He literally, on our first, OVW had a developmental center for the developmental center, and that was called Derby City Wrestling, which is ironically where I met Shane Tricky for the first time, along with Dana Swagger,
wow,
10 years ago. Okay. Yeah. A little shout out to those guys. But on episode one, the main event dark match, EC3 tore his ACL on like a slip body slam, something very simple. So then he went home and got huge and got hired. So I guess it worked out well for him.
Yeah.
But man, I don't know. It was a unique situation because you had so many. I mean, WWE's paying 50 guys to be there and 50 girls. Like Roca. She was Roca. I called her Roca. You guys don't know who that is. What's her name? Rosa Mendez.
Mm-hmm.
On the Divas show now. Yeah. Me and my partner were married to her. So like on TV, not literally, but on TV, any segment she was in, we were in.
Yep.
Because there would be somebody that needed to take the bumps. And that was our role, you know? Yeah, man. It's amazing the amount of talent that passed through there. And then because of that extension, when you would go up to the show, these people would treat you in a different way because of where you came from. And I guess that was one of the best things about it.
Mm.
Like Santino Marella, for instance. I remember when he actually was doing a Russian killer gimmick in 2006, where he was the most over guy in the territory.
Yeah.
So like 400 people would come to TV every week because it was free. Yeah. They weren't making money with their ticket sales. They were making money on, you know, the developmental system itself.
Yep.
So you had 90 guys, for instance, paying $40 a week to be there for classes. So I mean that money adds up, you know. Yeah. But these guys, I totally went blank. What were we talking about?
Santino being a Russian.
Yeah, that's why you have to tuck your chin when you take bumps, guys. Santino was like one of the most over guys on the roster. He was doing this Russian gimmick, and he would tap everybody out with an armbar. He was like a male Ronda Rousey, kind of.
That's awesome.
Super over, yeah. And then he got that opportunity and went up and he did something completely different. And then years later, those relationships paid off because you would have, I guess, access, and it's crazy how the people that you see then you would re-encounter later. Like, for instance, Aaron the Idol Stevens. Now he is, I'm really bad with knowing these guys' names as they're over. Who's the
Ring guy? Ring of Honor.
No. Aaron the Idol Stevens did a, he's on TV right now. He did the Macho Man gimmick just recently.
Damian Sandow.
Jeez.
How am I looking at you with the beard and not thinking of Damian Sandow?
I know. As you can tell, I don't have a subscription to the network. Damian Sandow is a guy who, like, I encountered him back in 2006, and then you see him in 2012, and he's the guy who puts in a word with one of the agents for you when you're an extra.
Absolutely.
And then they take extra special look at you, and then they take care of you. That's kind of like how the wrestling business works, and that's what I learned at OVW. Besides how to take a bump and why you do what, and, you know, besides the mechanical and the creative aspects, it's all about relationships, right place, right time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
And speaking of right place, right time, I guess the opposite side of that is being in OVW at the time when the WWE decided that we weren't going to have OVW as the developmental now.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to go with FCW, Florida Championship Wrestling. And obviously, that was when you were in OVW. How did that sort of come about, and what was it like for you at the time when that all went down?
It was awful. I remember in 2007, Khalil, my partner's real name, and I had been on the TV show for 7 months. We'd feuded with the Major Brothers, who are now, one of them I work with at Global Force.
Kurt Hawkins.
Zack Ryder, yeah. We got to feud with those guys, which was a big deal because, again, we didn't have jobs. So we were taking away those guys' TV time, and they weren't happy about it. But nonetheless, again, that's how crazy it is 10 years later. Now I'm working with a guy in a different company. But I remember Danny Davis was the owner of OVW, and he pulled us aside and he goes, "You guys make sure you don't get arrested, don't get in any trouble in the next 3 months. Make sure you come back after Christmas because they have plans for you." So when you're living on rice cakes and tuna fish and you're broke and you have no money and you hear that and you're like, oh, finally, all this nonsense. Because in my position, I wasn't getting paid. And I'm driving all these house shows on my own dime to try to just get an opportunity to be on the show to go put somebody over.
Yeah.
You know, so to hear that was phenomenal. I remember, though, that there was a lot of Triple H and Shawn Michaels just showed up one day at TV. Just showed up, which is probably not a good thing. Now, in retrospect, I didn't think of it that way, but, you know, now seeing how it played out. But they showed up and they took a look, you know, all over the place. And I remember they would gave guys advice and this and that and so on and so forth. But this was right around the time that we first started hearing about FCW. And half the crew had been transferred to FCW. Because they also had, like, Deep South at the time, but that was not going well. So a lot of those Deep South guys were going to FCW. And then all of a sudden, guys like Nick Nemeth, Dolph Ziggler now, and my buddy Mondo and a couple other guys started getting the call that they had to go down to Florida. So you kind of saw it starting to come about. And then I don't think WWE was extremely happy that non-contracted guys like myself were getting to work with their talent. Because they were afraid that their talent was going to get injured by just some goof off the street.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't think I specifically was the problem. But there were instances, though, where, like, mentally unstable people got in there, got an opportunity, and beat somebody up on TV. Like, it happened. So when they're paying you $1,000 a week, that's the last thing they want to happen. So it was a very controlled environment in that standpoint. But from there, it was you're on cloud nine because you finally think, oh man, at the time, oh, this 2 years I put in was really worth it. Yeah, I'm gonna get my break and blah blah blah. And a lot of the agents liked Khalil and I's work because we reminded them of like a Middle Eastern Midnight Express, which coincidentally was the tag team that we watched and took all everything from. And it didn't hurt that Jim Cornette was there mentoring us too.
That's awesome.
So yeah. But the art of being a heel is lost, and when you look like I look, especially when we're fighting two wars against those folks, you know. Yeah, it's all about being that heel and doing that stuff.
Yeah.
So it was just the right gimmick at the right time, man. We got so much of a reaction that they couldn't deny it. And any goof babyface that they put with us would be over because of the strength of our gimmick. It's not that I was great.
Yeah.
I just happened to be the right place, right time, right ethnicity. So we were on cloud nine about it, and then all of a sudden they yanked it.
Yeah.
John Laurinaitis was there in January and was like, oh, everything's great. We'll be here for a long time. And then literally 2 months later, they left. And I remember Danny pulling everybody. There's a roster of like 60 guys. Pulled everybody out in the stands and told them, this is the deal. They're gone. I don't know how long the doors are going to stay open. But there's an opportunity for you here. And there really was, because all those guys that were fighting for the opportunity to be a job guy in a territory.
Yeah.
And when I say territory, I mean weekly television with four house shows during the week and 2 days of training. Mm. So you're wrestling 6 days a week.
Yep.
Do you want this or not? Or do you just want to go work once a month and call yourself a wrestler? If you wanted that opportunity, it was there for you. And then all of a sudden, I got to go from being that guy fighting to be the job guy, putting over the Major Brothers, to carrying the show. Not that that's the end-all, be-all of your career, but how are you going to know how to be a job guy for WWE if you haven't jobbed somebody out yourself? Does that make sense? It was the opportunity was there, so you got to take it. So a lot of guys took it, and we did well for a while. But then, inevitably, if there's no carrot to dangle in front of the talent, how long are you going to be paying to go to house shows on your own, you know? So it was definitely from the highest to the lows. Then I found out ultimately we didn't get called up because Vince himself said no, because it was too close to the Muhammad Hassan time where the USA Network literally said, kill this character or we kill your show. So it was like the greatest time, but then at the same time it was too much heat.
The opportunities that it brought were was also sort of denying some other opportunities at the exact same time.
Yeah, but realistically, I'm not a genetic freak, so I would have never had any of those opportunities if that wasn't the situation, you know what I mean?
So with something like that, obviously, like you say, you sort of had the opportunity there of sort of stepping into a position on the OVW shows that previously you just didn't have access to. Was it something where did you sort of weigh up the possibility of maybe chasing the WWE side of things and going to Florida? Or were you happy to actually have these new opportunities presented to you in OVW?
Yes and no, because at the time that the OVW split happened, it was very apparent that there was heat.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was very apparent. Now, let me back up a little bit. I made a calculated decision to stay at OVW because it was everything I needed to get ready for that eventual full-time job.
Mm.
Meaning it was a weekly territory where people who had been working there, working in the business drawing money for 30 years, were giving me feedback on my matches.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So to me, it was okay not going and working all these indie shows, and which in retrospect, I do kind of deny, or I do kind of regret, but I felt like I was paying my dues for a payday down the road.
Yeah,
that would eventually come. I never wanted to go to FCW because I knew guys that had, and it did not work out well for them. Because a part of the reason why WWE pulled out, in my opinion, from what I saw, was the fact that they were using uncontracted guys with the contracted guys. So if they get tired of that business model and they move you down to Florida, do you really think that you're going to get an opportunity as a non-contracted guy?
Let's
pretend like somebody just shows up and knocks on the window right here and says, hey, can I come in and do your radio show? And you've never heard of him and you don't know anything and he doesn't even know. Would you let him in? That's kind of the mentality.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way they looked. So in my mind, no. I felt like cost-benefit analysis, I had no money. I was broke. I worked a joke of a job just enough to pay my bills and to pay my tuition because I knew down the road an opportunity would come. If you stick with this long enough and you put yourself in a position to succeed, you will get an opportunity.
Absolutely.
But it's on you to make the most of that opportunity.
Mm.
Yeah. So I knew my opportunity would come, so I quote-unquote paid my dues.
Give us a call on 9919-8089. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back after this.
Wonder why Gambino got the game. Half tie thicky, all she wanna do is bang. Got her head done, French braids, now she ASAP. Bino so insensitive, she asking why you say that. I'm chillin', real quiet, chillin'. Rich kid, paint me as a villain. Still spittin' that cash flow, DJ Khaled. I got penthouse on both coasts, PH balance. Real, I rep those, why though? Cause I said so. Deep in that Pepto, I got five on it like Ben Folds. I got more tail than that Petco. You faker than some sweet and low. Yeah, you got some silverware, but really, are you eating though? Are you eating though? Are you eating though? Breakfast, lunch, and dinner's for beginners. You ain't eating no. Never catching cases. Why they faces look so emo? Watch a hater hate me, wanna play me like a piano. My architect, no Japanese. Yo, girl, she Japanese. No hands like soccer teams. Yo, boys like soccer teams. You ain't Japanese. Nah. You ain't looking like me. Nah, nah, I ain't checking ID. But I bounce them with no problems. Tell them problems. I'm winning, yeah, yeah, I'm winning. I'm winning, yeah, yeah, I'm winning. I'm winning, yeah, yeah, I'm winning. Rich kid, paint me as a villain. Don't be mad, cause I'm doing me better than you doing you. Don't be mad, cause I'm doing me better than you doing you. Don't be mad, cause I'm doing me better than you doing you. Better than you doing you, you. Different color my passport, Instagram my stack load, hashtag my day wear, and your girl drank my daycare, and I'm born rich, life ain't fair. Silver spoon, boom, boom, boom. Ain't nobody sicker in my Fisker, boom, ho, ain't nobody. Fiskers don't make noise when they start up, just so you know. Top of the holy totem, rich forever, a million was not the quota. My father owned half the MoMA and did it with no diploma. Year off, got no rules, tripping off of them toadstools. More green than my Whole Foods, and I'm too fly, Jeff Goldblum. Got a glass house in the Palisades, that AKA white hood, OKKK. Furniture custom, you shop at IKEA. So Maserati, you ripping the Kia. Spending this money is longer than near. Live like a Coppola, me and Sophia. Waking up broke man, wouldn't want to be a friends with a dope man, bring a girlfriend, man, trouble when I see her. I'm on a pier. Oh, I got my cool on.
I'm winning, so they had to dunk at Gatorade. Now I don't give a fuck about my family name.
Why? Don't be mad, cause I'm doing me better than you doing you. Don't be mad, cause I'm doing me better than you doing you. Don't be mad, cause I'm doing me better than you doing you. Better than you doing you. 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 What you doing?
This is 1FM Community Radio, broadcasting from the Victoria University at Werribee.
An important message from Victoria's Fire Services.
Winter is a high-risk time for home fires. Don't risk a family tragedy. Never leave cooking unattended. Check heaters and electrical appliances. Test your smoke alarms. Work out and rehearse a fire escape plan. And check on elderly relatives to make sure they're fire safe. Visit homefiresafety.com.au for everything you'll need to safeguard your home and your loved ones. This winter, make home fire safety part of the family.
WinFM has a new website with a full program guide, streaming links, program pages, and now with podcasts for every show. Check it out at winfm.org.au.
Hi, Missy Higgins here for Rad, reminding you that friends don't let friends drink drive.
88.9 Win FM Community Radio.
88.9 1 FM. Welcome back to Covering the Canvas. I'm your host, Jesse Beer, joined by the Covering the Canvas team and the debutting GFW cornerstone OVW wrestler, now wrestling down under in Australia.
Now living as well.
Yeah.
Living.
We won't give away your address.
Thank you.
Actually, give us a call at 9919-8089. Mr. Muhammad Ali Vaez. Thank you for coming out to beautiful, freezing cold Werribee, 8.8 degrees.
It's wet, it's cold.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
Did you lock your car?
I did. I definitely did.
It's that bad.
That won't stop.
I thought the weather was great, though. Las Vegas was 120 degrees last week.
Not Fahrenheit? Fahrenheit, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that converts to, but man, it was hot. Africa hot.
Speaking of Africa, you should be doing my job. Look at that.
Do we get an intro for
this? Oh, yeah, we do. Our great friend, Power Udi. What's he been up to this week, Shane?
My name is the Power Udi of Nigeria.
Our great friend, Power Udi. What's he been up to?
I don't think we've ever had a better segue for that segment ruined completely.
Well done, Jesse.
But what has he been up to this week? Well, our good friend, Great Power Rudy, was reminding us all to get in early. Friends, remember to vote for Red Card Headbutt for Finisher of the Year at the end of 2015. So, you know...
What awards is this? Does he mention?
He doesn't mention what awards. Possibly, I don't know, when are the Oscars? Are they coming up at the end of the year? That's maybe an award they give out there this year.
Mm.
Is that his finishing move or something?
Are you not familiar with Great Power Udi, Steve?
Sorry.
Of course,
maybe,
it's a finisher.
Maybe there's the Nigerian version of the Slammies or something like that.
Exactly, the Nigerian Slammies. I didn't even think of that.
See, red card headbutt to an Englishman means Zinedine Zidane when he was playing for France in the World Cup soccer.
Yeah, that's where he gets it from. It's a soccer reference.
Well, there you go.
So you got the reference and you still didn't know it. Haven't I made you watch enough Great Power Udi matches?
No. I have a feeling this
I'm waiting for the
award body is trying to get over on Power Udi. They're trying to get the rub from him.
Mm. I think you're right.
That's good point. Good point.
Yeah. You gotta think about it, guys.
Exactly right. Does he really want to lend his name to such a dodgy award? Maybe he's better than that.
Once again, Power Udi ahead of everybody else.
You're too good for that, Great Power Udi. You're too good for it. But of course, I was thrilled last week at the prospect. We mentioned it on the air that I was going to ask the great man himself whether I could name my rainbow lorikeet Jack, Great Power Jack, after he had previously let someone else know that they could name their child Great Power, your name here.
For a small fee.
Yeah.
For a small, modest fee. I was thrilled. I tweeted him. I was expecting the honour to be bestowed upon Jack. I don't think I could get a more lackluster response, though. It was, I like birds. You can name him what you like.
What a sweetheart.
Well, I can name him Great Power Jack, but it's kind of not the pomp and circumstance I was really hoping for.
You don't have the endorsement you were looking for.
Oh, this is not like that time when he gave Jake Andrew Arthur the role in Bullet Club Nigeria. That was a big deal. This is kind of like, all right, okay.
Well, Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's like a potential contender for the Olympics and
Commonwealth Games medalist. Yeah,
he's a shooter. Yep. He's like 7 foot tall. You know, he's on Power Udi's level, according to Power Udi. I think.
Well,
my bird
has a stuffed bird that it occasionally throws around the cage. It has wrestled with plastic containers. I think, you know, you're selling him short by saying that he's not as good as Jake Andrew Arthur. Sorry, Jake, but Jack's pretty good too.
Yeah. Fair enough.
We asked you when you came to the show if you actually had any Great Power Udi stories, but you didn't. But you had a really good secondhand African story.
Yeah.
I would love to hear again.
A couple of my friends would do these tours every year with the Barbarian. He would take them over to Nigeria and Kenya, I believe. One of my best friends in the world is named Mike Mondo. He's phenomenally talented guy. You may know him from the Spirit Squad or from his Ring of Honor stuff, but for a couple of years he was my roommate. And Mondo would always look forward to going and doing the African tours because he would do the Africa tour and he would do mocap, make the video games. Mm-hmm. So if you ever play WWE 2K, whatever.
Because they do that through
Mike
the performance
Mondo
center.
Doing
yeah,
the
yeah.
moves.
Yeah.
He's one of the main guys that does it.
Yeah.
So he would go to, him and Cliff Compton would go to do these tours, and they said it was like the carniest experience ever, because you'd have all these like warlords, like legit warlord guys with machine guns that were everywhere, and you would have like 40,000 Africans around this ring, and half of them had machine guns, and they'd fire them off in the air, and just a crazy situation to like perform in. And Mondo stopped going because the United Nations building, like a mile from his hotel room, got blown up. So, like, legitimately. So, that, like, a terrorist attack. So, the next year, Crimson took his place. And Crimson got a lot of respect from the local warlords because, as a military veteran, he was able to break down an AK-47 very fast and efficiently. So, you know, a warlord is going to appreciate that type of stuff. And from what I was told, he got the royal treatment in Nigeria. Now he goes every year. So, you know, that's my secondhand Africa story.
It goes to show you never know the kinds of skills that are going to come in handy in life.
Let's just hope he never forgets how to do that. Can you imagine 1 year, right, it's time for you to... I can't remember.
Yeah. But you got to think from the warlord standpoint, he's paying money to have all these guys come over. If something goes down, he wants to know that the guy he's bringing over
can handle it.
Knows his stuff. Yeah, so, you know.
Plus, it's kind of cool. I mean, you're bringing this guy over for something completely unrelated, and now he's talking your talk. That'd be like if I got a plumber to come over to the house, and all of a sudden he's suplexing me, and it's like, hey, wrestling, come
exactly.
on, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
How does he even get into the situation initially that he has the gun given to him?
That I don't know, but from what I was told, like, they'll have, the first night they get there, they have, like, this big feast. And that's like the time for the warlord to show off, you know, he's, this is my eight wives, and this is my this, and this is my that, and look at this. You know, it's kind of like, it's a very peacocking type of society, you know what I mean? So right off the bat, you know he's the top guy because he's the one with the biggest tent or whatever, and he's got the nice food, and you're here at his bequest, you know, so you're beholden to him. And knowing Crimson, if he saw an AK-47, he would be the type of guy that would say, hey, I can break that down and have it translated to the warlord, who probably didn't believe him, but maybe he did, I don't know. Big 6'5" white man covered in tattoos with red hair. He's kind of scary looking. Maybe he knows what he's doing.
Maybe just some little guy with an AK-47 pointed at him and he just took it off and stripped it down in front of him.
I like to believe just that. Just to embarrass him. I could see that happen.
Maybe not.
Give it to you, kid.
Some of those names you mentioned going over to that African tour, wrestle alongside you now at Global Force Wrestling.
Yes.
For people who don't actually know what Global Force Wrestling is, but I assume most of our audience do, can you just give us a quick rundown of it?
Yes, it's a company that was created by Jeff Jarrett about 2 years ago, I think, or a year and a half ago. And by company, I mean it was a concept that he created.
Mm.
And Jeff then spent the next year to 2 years, he's still doing it now, just going all over the place and looking at talent. And the concept that he is selling is an alternative to what's out there now. So what is out there now? WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA to an extent. So he's got... now, I should clarify this, that I'm on a need-to-know basis, and I really don't need to know anything. So a lot of this is speculation on my point.
Yeah.
But the idea is he's got affiliates all over the world. So if you are doing a global show, I don't think it's very difficult to think that you would take that show on the road and tape television in different continents. Maybe, I don't know, Europe, maybe down here with the affiliates, you know. So that's kind of the idea. The way wrestling has always worked is, especially in the last 15 years with how WWE does it, is you have to get into the system, integrate into a system, and then once you're integrated in that system, wait your turn, or right place, right time, or be a genetic freak, or be somebody's dad, or, you know, some kind of in. This idea is, instead of having like a big, heavy company, what if, let's just say, you wanted to tape television in Australia, and you brought over six guys that had mainstream name value because of other things that they had done, and instead of building your show around a certain group of guys, you give guys like, I don't know, let's just say Adam Brooks an opportunity on that show, side by side with a guy like, I don't know, Brian Myers.
Mm-hmm.
So then you see an established pro international working with a local guy. And I'm just throwing Brooksy's name out there because, you know, I like to rib him all the time. It definitely won't be him now. But that's the idea, is it's taken out of a lot of the bureaucracy of running a company, because the days of a wrestling company living and dying by a television deal are done. It's the money's not there. Mm. And to have a roster of 40 guys under contract where you're paying them a livable wage, I mean, that's not really realistic now, is it?
Mm.
But if you have a skeleton company in that you are a television production company that produces a specific product that is built on the premise of giving people an opportunity to show what they can do, I think that's kind of the idea of where it's going.
Mm.
So that in a nutshell is Global Force Wrestling. That's kind of how I got my opportunity, because we go back to people that you know and coming full circle. Well, Danny Davis, who runs OVW, knew Jeff 25, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, when your potential employer is serious about maybe giving you an opportunity, do you think they're going to do some reference checks? And that's where being a good human being and not being super carny, unless you're like a Pavarotti, pays off. So I met Jeff in 2013. My beard was longer then than it is now.
Well,
this is 3 months of growth, and then it was 9 months of growth. So it was just huge. And I remember I was put into a situation where my partner at the time was, he was Egyptian. He was just enormous, but he was not good. And that's saying it nicely. But just enormous. And he would get blown up walking to the ring. But I loved him. He was such a cool guy, and I liked to hang out with him.
Yeah.
So, you can be my partner. Well, let's go. And I would do all the work in the matches. I was working with him, and I was working against a guy from the Tennessee region named Sean Schultz, who's a very good performer. But his tag partner played football for the University of Knoxville, which was the town that we were in.
Yep.
And that's a big deal. If you're from that, like, everybody knew who he was.
Yeah.
So this guy sold all the tickets to this show. But he had never been in a ring in his life. He didn't know how to take a bump. He didn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my situation. Take this green partner and wrestle this guy who's never wrestled before in his life against this guy who's a good hand, and you may be able to get a job out of it. So I asked Rip Rogers, who's like my wrestling dad, he's my longtime trainer, what would you do in this situation? And I laid out this scenario for him, and I was all proud. You know, this is very simple, and blah, blah, blah. And Rip told me to go and beat up the person who put me in the situation, because I was destined to fail, and it was impossible. So we had the show, the day of the show, and, you know, the thing about OVW being a revolving door because of it being WWE Developmental Center is you would have a lot of guys that looked like $1 million that would come in and get an opportunity because they looked like $1 million. But they were awful. So when you're the guy who's not the genetic freak, but you're a very good, what they call a carpenter, I had a lot of opportunity to work with guys that were awful and to learn how to protect myself doing so, but more importantly, how to make them look good. So this was literally, I had done it hundreds of times before up to this point. So it was, I had a very simple match with this guy. He just stood in the middle and I ran into him and took all the bumps. Well, a guy like Jeff, who is third generation promoter and a worker himself, sees the value in that.
Yep.
Here's a guy who's not getting his stuff in, who has a skill set, which is he can make other people look good.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, he has this unique ethnicity, and he happened to go to a military academy, and blah, 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 blah. So he started talking to me that night, and he told me that he was putting this thing together, and it was a big deal, and so on and so forth, but he couldn't give me that much information. And how many times do you hear that in wrestling?
Absolutely.
I'd been cast on 5 reality shows. I've looked. It makes your head want to explode. So I didn't put a lot of thought into it at that point. But everything Jeff told me he was going to do, as far as sending guys that he had an interest in to OVW and the progress of the company and how he was going to roll everything out slowly and so on and so forth, that happened. And then people started showing up 6 months later looking for me by name at OVW. Hey, I was told to come find you. And at the time, I wrote the show, so I didn't really think anything of it. But then after two or three guys I had never seen before came and looked for me, I eventually asked one of them, who sent you? Jeff. Oh, Jeff. Yeah. Oh, maybe that is real. You know? So it was kind of one of those situations.
I think even when we first heard about Global Force Wrestling, I think we did a news story on it, and we just laughed about it because it sounded so ludicrous.
Yeah, of course. Sound like a database, yeah.
How many times do you hear of some scheme, some corny thing where somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, well, we're going to change the business, brother.
we're going to work with all these companies around the world.
I have to confess, I looked at the roster page today, and if you'd have asked me if all of these guys would be wrestling for this company, I'd be thinking, that's never going to happen. You're never going to get these guys and this guy, and that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But they're there.
Yeah, and that's even with a guy like Jarrett in charge. Yeah. Mm. We didn't believe it was going to happen.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, who is the only person who has created a company out of nothing that is still in existence today? It's
exactly.
Jeff.
Exactly.
And TNA has been in business longer than WCW is in business at this point. Mm. Even though maybe they're losing a lot of money, but I have friends who are getting a paycheck there, so I hope they succeed.
Yeah.
But what I saw at, we taped 10 episodes of television while I was there, with four more to go.
Yeah.
Something's going on. There was way too much effort, way too many production guys.
Production value looked pretty on point, and it was a huge crowd.
Yes, we had 5,000, I think, the first night. The first set of tapes.
Big numbers, yeah.
Yeah.
Can we get amped over here? That's what the show's called, yeah, amped.
Amped. Yeah. Well, that's a very strong potential. I mean, if you look at the lay of the land, why would we have affiliates all over the world?
Mm.
And why would you call it Global Force?
Mm.
And why would I go to all these different shows and look at talent?
Three companies alone in Australia are affiliated with it.
Now, yeah. And we, to my knowledge, we don't have one in Melbourne.
Wrestle Clash.
Well, I heard that they're not running shows.
Oh, okay. Well, good point.
Even if they are, do they have a training school?
Yeah.
So
no. Yeah, that's a good point.
You got to take these kind of things into account. Mm-hmm. So as I'm also a talent scout down here for Jeff for Global Force.
Yep.
And what I'm looking at is, first off, I'm looking at talent that I could literally put in front of Jeff today and say, hey, this guy could be on TV right now.
Mm.
And then I'm also looking at guys that could be on TV a couple years down the road if somebody gets in their ear and they do the repetition or they do whatever. People that you know aren't wasting their time and yours.
Yep.
But then you also have to look at the affiliate companies. Do they have a television show? Why does that matter? It's not like you're drawing money with television. No. But if I'm going to say, who can I pick on next? If I'm going to send Josh Shooter, for instance, to Jeff Jarrett and to Amps Television, and he doesn't know where a hard camera is because he's never worked on a television show before, who looks stupid besides him?
You do, yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
So these are the types of things that go into effect. Mm. So when I go to all these shows, I'm not only looking at the talent, and I've seen a lot. I think I've seen most talent in Melbourne's area, at least more than once. I went to Adelaide and saw RCW set up, and man, they blew
me
away.
Amazing day.
Awesome.
Amazing.
Very good. And Matt and Chris Basso are phenomenal, especially Chris. He blew me away how fundamentally sound he is.
Mm.
And that, not that I haven't seen that. There's a lot of talented people down here. But what is the end state in Australian wrestling? Where is there to go?
Mm.
Who's making a living?
Mm.
Wrestling.
No one.
So if we have some kind of entity where you can channel your energies and you can get an opportunity to get on international television, that maybe Global Force isn't going to pay you enough money to buy your house in Werribee, but
that wouldn't take much.
maybe that exposure brings you to a higher level in the business where you can get other indie bookings.
Mm-hmm.
Where now all of a sudden you're being flown to Perth and you're going to New Zealand and you're going to Tasmania and you're going to Japan and China. And that's how it works.
We're seeing a lot of our boys now going overseas, guys and girls going overseas, giving them
awesome,
amazing exposure, working for huge companies. And
got to.
Yeah.
You got to.
Shooter's in the UK now, I think.
IPW, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you don't leave the fishbowl, how are you ever going to know the world outside?
Yeah.
You have to. It is essential. And I don't think it's an accident that the people, like, for instance, Carlos Cannon is a guy who blew me away when I saw him perform. And then all of a sudden I started to notice the pattern that all the guys that he trained were the guys that initially interested me mm-hmm. when I first got here. Well, what did Carlos do in his career? He got up on his own dime and went to Canada and trained with Lance Storm. Wow, now it makes sense.
Mm.
This is not reinventing the wheel. There are people in the world who know how to do this art. And those talents that get up and go to those places, they benefit from that. And then when they come and you see a guy like a Josh Shooter on a card, well, he stands out because he's got a body and he can talk and he's fairly good. His work isn't see-through. So that's the kind of stuff that you're looking for. There's a lot of talented guys down here. A lot. And if you were to put together, say, a tour of Australia, let's go with Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth. Could you fill out a card with local talent and also use three or four guys, let's say a Chris Masters and a PJ Black and whoever else they're pushing right now from the Global Force?
Mm.
Could you use that and draw some kind of house off the novelty? I think you could. That's what OCW's been doing in Melbourne for a little while when they have these internationals on their show. So if you built a business model around that and you're not limiting yourself to Australia, but you're also doing it in Asia, in Japan, in England, now all of a sudden it becomes a viable business model.
Yeah.
Instead of just living and dying by some network executive and whether or not they're going to fund your little TV project.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And you see that where we've had companies like with TNA in the last couple of years where a TV deal, the threat of that going is it
makes
almost,
or breaks them, yeah.
Almost makes or breaks the company. Yeah, it's a
absolutely
big deal when that is what everything hinges on. So
yeah.
Jeff has been smart, obviously, in sort of coming up with a new model for a new era
mm-hmm.
because that old sort of structure of, yeah, live or die by TV, less and less people even watch TV these days.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas getting his, he's got creative ways of already, we've seen, getting his product out to new audiences uh-huh. using new media. You know, that's something, yeah. and it's different. It differentiates itself rather than being a small WWE.
Mm-hmm.
It's something different.
Yes. So. Well, that's the problem is WWE, nobody's going to catch them.
Yeah.
I mean, they are in the business of wrestling and sports entertainment and making money. So
yep.
if you try to do what they do, you will lose every time because they have millions of dollars and hundreds of millions of dollars
yeah.
And a structure in place. It's a fool's... It'd be like if I tried to start my own footy league.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't know anything about footy. So that's you'd be out of your element. But I think this approach to it, at the very least, it's an opportunity for the boys to make some money
yeah.
and to get some exposure.
Yeah.
Which, if you can sell five extra T-shirts because somebody saw you on King of Trios, you yeah. know, hey... More power to you. Maybe other companies around here are more than willing to pay you the extra $50 you think you deserve because you got went over there and got an opportunity.
Yep.
Makes sense? Mm. So, yeah, in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking to book Power Hootie.
That's just an excuse to bring him. On a final note, any shows you want to plug before we take off?
Yeah, I am doing OCW, Outback Championship Wrestling. I get to face Brooksy on Friday. I'm looking forward to beating him up. And that's it.
Are we going
to
start seeing your face in a lot more shows?
Well, you are, yes. I am, now that's my biggest concern. When I first started wrestling, I was always worried about getting, messing up. Now, the only thing I worry about is getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the first 10 episodes of Global Force are in the can and my involvement with that's done, yes, you will start seeing me all sorts of places. I'm going to reach out and, ultimately, I want to form a relationship with everybody in this country that does what we do. Because at the end of the day, I want to know if there's an awesome cameraman in Brisbane. Well, if Global Force ever runs a show on this continent, I want to pull the best talent from around the country to do that.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? That's kind of what he wants me to do here. So.
And if you ever want someone who's particularly good at Lego building contests in their younger years, get in touch with me because I know some experts in that field.
Just, I will, and if you can learn how to break down an AK-47,
that's next.
Another good skill.
I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. I ain't happy, I'm feeling glad. I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. It's 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 coming on.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. Now, time for me is nothing, cause I'm counting no A's. Nah, I couldn't be there. Nah, you shouldn't be scared. I'm good at...
FM subscribes to the Community Broadcasting Codes of Practice. These codes outline standards relating to program content, Australian music, and sponsorship.